Welcome to The Hours. I'm Tyler. This is Mark. We are Savvy Basketball. If you didn't know, we're both wearing the shirt. It's interesting. Your shirt looks like it's spelled correctly left to right, but mine visually looks backwards to me. Is that the same for you?
It is. Mine's backwards. Yours is good.
Random thought. Have you ever tested the theory that toilets flush counterclockwise south of the equator?
I've heard that, but then I think recently I've heard that that is an old wives' tale.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone listening that is south of the equator, please confirm which way does your toilet flush? Mark, are you with 100% confidence? Could you tell me which direction your toilet flushes, clockwise or counterclockwise?
I'm going counter.
Okay. Interesting. You should say that. I'm saying clockwise for my own toilet. So maybe you live south of the equator. I do.
I wasn't fully confident in my answer. One thing I think coaches should be confident about, if we're going to talk any basketball today, is special situations.
Yeah, I mean, okay, this is so good because I would say if put to the test, most coaches feel unprepared for special situations and then are scrambling to joystick their players in the moment because you have an idea of what you're trying to do, but your players are not prepared in advance, meaning they don't understand your principles. You haven't repped it out in these special situations enough in practice. And I would say you probably don't have the shared language and naming for these special situations. So we are going to try to help move all of us along in our preparation for special situations today. Mark, maybe let me first give my definition of special situations, and then maybe you can make any additions or edits.
Okay.
I would actually say a special situation is a second order opportunity. A first order opportunity is what happens most in games. And we at Savvy Basketball believe that you should get good at what happens most. First order things would be things like transition. It happens a lot, right? First order, that's offensively and defensively, right? First order thing would be something like actions. It happens a lot, right? Whenever you are neutral between the offense and defense, you want to run an action. That happens a lot. Transition is the most common advantage situation, but that would be maybe another first order thing is like, how do you play when you have the advantage on offense and defense? And how do you play when you have a disadvantage on offense and defense? Basketball is a game of opposites. So before we get into special situations, which we are going to frame as second order things, they should come second, but they should show up in your preparation. Mark, what am I missing as far as first order situations that we want to prioritize training? If I said like transition, advantage, neutral.
I don't know if there's anything you're missing. I guess we could zoom in a little bit, talk about like actions. How are you creating your advantage, or just something as simple as like guarding the ball? Those are all rebounding, I guess.
Okay, that's the one that came to mind for me as I was stopped talking and started listening. I think rebounding is first order. So if you're making a list here at home, they like if you believe that your job as a coach is to make sure that your players are protected before they jump into their first game, protected means they know and have prepared for how they should play, what skills they should have, what they should be doing in these first order situations. This is your four-step short list that I would suggest. Transition, advantage on offense. How do you play when you have an advantage? Neutral, what action do you run when you're neutral? And then rebounding, what is the expectation for rebounding as far as your roles, how many you're standing in the glass, what technical or technique are you emphasizing? Those are all first order things. Special situations are second order things. These are things that happen a lot, but not as much as those first order things. And really your goal in special situations, I would argue, is how can we steal possessions and how can we steal points? How can we get a couple more possessions and how can we just like get some really just like stolen points that your opponent's like, we shouldn't have given that one up. That was too easy. And so we are going to run through special situations and give you a couple of ideas about these special situations. Now, Mark, let's popcorn back and forth some of the special situations that you would suggest coaches prepare for.
Yeah. First, let me just frame what I, when I think special situations. So I've never thought of like first order, second order, but I used to think, and I think most coaches, when they hear special situations, think like end of game situation. We're down five, 1 minute to go. You know, are we going for threes or twos? To me, and that is a special situation, but I would call that a late game or end of games special situation. I think special situations are baseline out of bounds, sideline out of bounds, even subs, fouls, free throws, in between quarters, halftime is a special situation. Like anything that you, I guess, have most control over can be considered a special situation. Like when, you know, when our team is out there playing, let's say, like you talked about, like neutral, right? Like we don't necessarily know what action they're going to run. It's going to be something that we practice, but we don't really know. But when ball goes out of bounds, we have complete control over what our team's doing if we wanted to coach like that. So special situation, I guess I'll go first.
Well, can I, before you go first, Mark, I do want to actually frame this more because you said something really good. And if this is the only thing that a coach takes out of this episode of the podcast, I think it's worth it. You could just like stop right now. Special situations are not only end game situations. And I think that's an imperfect understanding. If the only thing that you practice and prepare for are end game situations and you think you've covered special situations, you are leaving opportunity on the table. You're leaving money on the table. And special situations include, it's a broader principle that include in game situations, but we're talking about all special situations. And if I would say most coaches do a passable job of addressing first order things that we discussed before, most coaches do a poor job of addressing in game situations. And most coaches do no job, do not even address the larger part of special situations that Mark and I are going to hit on. We will hit on some in game, I think, as well, but like, just press stop now and change your lens on that thing, and you will actually address these special situations, because your greatest opportunity to gain a competitive advantage is playing a game no one else is participating in. When you go play a game that everyone's participating in, that's your, you have the least chance of gaining a competitive advantage because everyone's playing that game. So everyone's playing the first order game. You are playing the second order game of special situations, and in special situations, if they're playing it, they're playing the end game special situations. They're not playing everything else. And so go play the game. You'll probably win. All right, go ahead, Mark. What's your first one?
All right. I'm going to go with one that might not traditionally be thought of as special situations since you framed it so well. I'm going to go free throws.
Oh, thank you. I wasn't going to go there. And the moment you said it, get good at what happens most. So now look at your special situations. Be like, okay, what happens a ton in games? Free throws happen a ton. Talk to me about it. What do we do? How do we win? How do we get some advantage here, Mark?
Yeah, I'm going to vamp about free throws. Just everything that I would think about.
Please.
One is, let's just talk about the shooter. So let's say we're on offense and we're shooting free throws. Give your players like some kind of like breathing technique, some kind of routine to go through. If you look, like most of the pros get the ball from the referee, kind of hold it on their hip, deep breath. Like, I think that's super important. Like what's different between practice free throws and game free throws is fatigue and pressure. So can we shoot fatigued free throws in practice? Yes. Can we simulate the pressure? No, it's impossible. It's never going to be completely representative. So give them something to relax, calm their nerves. Second, how are we rebounding these? Like, do we even rebound? Like, I think where you line up on in between the hash marks is really important. So as an offensive rebounder, we were as high up as possible because that bottom defender is trying to step into you. So create as much space away from that player as possible. So like little details like that, I think really matter. And then do you have your player, like X-ing is something that's common at the higher levels. I think what percent of high schools do you think teach their offensive rebounding players to X on a free throw?
10%.
Yeah, I would say maybe even less. Like I haven't seen, there's been very little that I've scouted.
And if you're teaching, you're not teaching it very well because I haven't seen it. They're not
exactly. Exactly.
Like, maybe I've mentioned it once or twice, but there's no standard around it. It's not emphasized. It's not trained. Yeah.
That's one of those things where you get from a coach's clinic, you go in October, you install it with your team, and then you like never talk about it again.
Yes.
All right. So here's an interesting one that we have used is one they've changed, thank goodness, the rule recently about when the ball releases, the players are live on the free throw line. If you're back, you've got to wait for the ball to hit the rim. So traditionally teams have X'd here. One thing that I would share with coaches that was effective for us is we would put our best athlete on the arc, on the shell, on the perimeter, and we would have our player on the right side crash middle hard, and that put your
so this is when your team's shooting the free throw, is that right?
Yes. Mark? Yeah, okay. I'm going all offensive free throw right here.
Okay,
put your best rebounder on the right side, have them attack the middle, so because they're going to get the squeeze, right? They're going to get the pinch, so they're going to occupy two defenders from that right side. Run your best athlete in when the ball hits the rim to the right side. We've had that ball land right in our lap for an offensive rebound putback. So just little details. You don't have to use that all the time, but how many times are we in a situation in a season where it's like, oh, we have to intentionally miss this free throw and you have absolutely no plan for it. So I'll talk about intentionally missing a free throw and then you can go. When you're going to intentionally miss a free throw, the ball has to hit the rim. Don't assume your players know that. Usually we put our right foot on the nail when shooting a free throw. I would have them move over and like straddle the rim or just a little bit over and tell them to shoot a normal free throw, because we probably want a true rebound unless we're going to like fire it off the rim, which is really, really hard. And then you can run that play there. So just having something in the toolbox for when you have to intentionally miss. Last thing I will say on intentionally missing a free throw, I'm going to flip to the defensive side here. Let's say Tyler's team is shooting a free throw. They're going to intentionally miss it because there's less than a second left and they're down two. I'm going to violate. As a defensive rebounder, I'm going to intentionally step over the line and have a lane violation. So if he misses it, it doesn't count. If he makes it, if he screws up and makes it, it does count. Game's over. But by intentionally violating, you get to see how they're attacking the offensive rebound, and then you can plan for it. So I've just like talk about those kind of special situations. Free throw, we kind of went from, hey, this happens in the first quarter, but also there's a lot of detail in there at end of games as well.
Everyone probably needs to press pause, rewind, and re-listen, because there's a lot of nuance there. I'm like even tracking and like, pick one and make it like breathing for your team. Many of you, nearly 1,000, watch these podcasts on YouTube weekly. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone's on the same page. So going back to your athlete crashing from outside the arc. So four here would be our best athlete. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And five here is our best rebounder.
Put your biggest guy or girl there. That way, one and two pinch. Have them attack front of the rim.
Yeah, so they're attacking front rim, occupying these two who are trying to pinch, and four's swooping in for that right miss.
And three will start to go middle, spin left. So then you create a little triangle right around the rim, which gives you the best chance. So if you were in a position to intentionally miss, I would put player two that shooting. Yeah, practice it and then put two offset to their right when the player is shooting the free throw. That way we miss to the right and it falls right in four's lap. We've actually won a game doing this. Mm. And now, granted, it was a summer league game, but the other coach looked at me and was like, you have got to be kidding me that just worked. I think he was like genuinely confused. Like, was that designed or did that just happen? But it was by design. We did get, I mean, you got to get lucky, but I always tell people that people say like, oh, what are the odds of that working? It's like, well, what are the odds that you're going to win with a half a second left down two anyway? Like it's a Hail Mary play, but at least you got a Hail Mary play in.
For those of you that somehow are just joining us as if this were live and you're tuning in on your television set, I need to do a quick recap. We're talking about special situations. Maybe this is for me. We've identified that special situations are things that happen a lot, but aren't practiced a lot. Free throws are one of those things. And that's why we're starting into, if you can just make your free throw special situation 10% more effective, that's going to help you win more games. Let me stay on free throws. Circling back, you will help your players make more free throws by helping them establish an effective free throw routine than by having them practice shooting a bunch of free throws. In fact, if someone is practicing shooting free throws without duplicating their actual game free throw routine, I don't think it's worthwhile at all. So free throws is actually a less is more situation. Make it as game-like as possible all the way through the routine, if you're going to be practicing them at all, and make the focus the routine, not the make. And here's one thing beyond the deep breath and relaxation, beyond a repetitive routine that you can help your players with. Encourage them to make every free throw twice. Encourage them to make every free throw twice. What this actually means is, as part of their free throw routine, they need to actually visualize the ball going in before they shoot the basketball. It's something that very few players do. They step up and try to make one shot. Instead, have them make the shot twice. Part of the routine is whether they, like Steve Nash used to actually physically shoot an imaginary ball as part of his free throw routine, and that's what he's doing mentally. I don't think they need to make the physical act, but maybe they do. But they need to see it go in, and then they just duplicate it. That's a small thing that I found with many, many players has helped them significantly if they actually make it twice. It's for the same reason that when players do shoot two free throws, if they're going to miss one, the most likely one they're going to miss is, you guessed it, the first one, because the first one's the hardest one to make. So let's make the first one in our mind first. Second, make every player, require every player to slow down at the free throw line, get off the line, make the ref like motion them to the line. You want more time. Why? Because then you as a team can plan to use free throws as a timeout without calling a timeout. It's a wonderful opportunity for teammates to connect physically, talk to each other. It's a great time for if you are playing a shorter lineup, you can actually get a breather without calling a timeout, right? It's a time where you can, like, I would teach your players, do you want your players to look at you? And if so, which player do you want to look at you every free throw? If you have to yell at your point guard or whatever player, say, hey, Tyler, you haven't taught them what the process is for free throws, right? I want my Racker and Dragon coming over to me every free throw, because there's things I want them to relay to the team. Also, like with what Mark already shared, like have a plan with who lines up where and teach that offensively and defensively. Like Mark's offensive spots are very intentional. Most players just randomly go in, or if they feel tired, they don't go in. There's no intent to the free throw. I already talked about touch, and connect. I think that's really, really important. And then I also had written down, Mark, be intentional about your offense when you're shooting a free throw on, like you're on offense. What do you want your rebounder on the 3-point line to do? I think that's one of the most underutilized things, and they should be in the field of play. Standing back at half court or back on our 3-point line does not gain an advantage. I want them in the field of play with what I've actually taught is back taps off the free throw. It's much easier to actually just tip the ball back to the 3-point line than actually secure it as an offensive rebounder. So I think it's a great opportunity to back tap. Shout out Tyson Chandler. All right. Any others on free throws, or should we move on? We're not going to get through every special situation today. This became a two-parter.
We spent a long time on free throws. The only thing I will say is all of your tips I never thought about. So I learned something right now. I mean, just designating one player to look at you. Cause I've been that coach, like, Hey, hello. Like sending smoke signals out there trying to,
I am that coach. Yeah. These fourth graders just don't listen.
Right. Yeah. And also delaying is great. I mean, Bob McKillop is one that comes to mind. He's like a master at winning in between the whistles of getting his players to tie their shoes or, you know, bump the ball out to buy time. All that's really good. Like I never even thought about like making the ref summon you to the line, and it gives you 10 more seconds. And if you have a plan, you're using those 10 seconds and the other coach is going, hey, Tyler, come over here. Yeah. And you've got it. So every free throw, I mean, that's an extra 2 minutes of instruction you can give your team.
Yeah. Especially if you are using games to teach, which we do encourage here at Savvy. All right, baseline out of bounds. This is a special situation that I think is only addressed by a thick book of inbounds plays. And I think that there is significant opportunity here, even if it's just to enhance how you do that. how you address this special situation. And you can say offense or defense, Mark, but I'm probably going to focus on defense and have to plug in my computer.
I'm going to go offense then.
Okay.
All right. First, forget about positions or roles. Actually, not roles. Forget about positions. Have your best inbounder inbound the ball.
Yes.
Have spots for, and no matter what size or shape they are, if they're your tallest player, that's fine. They're your best passer. They inbound the ball. I always design my inbounds packages from the same alignment. So we might have, you know, one, we'd call it a series. We had something called Clemson series or line series. And all of those, we lined up in the same exact spots and we ran different plays out of the same alignment. I think that becomes more difficult to scout. Some tips, just as I go through this in my head, your inbounder should not step out of bounds until your team is ready. So just like Tyler shared on free throws, make the referee call you out of bounds. Do not step out of bounds until you're ready to get the ball, to give your team more time. Take a step further back than you think you need to create a little bit more space if they're guarding the ball. I'm interested to hear defensively if you guard the ball or the goal, because we would run different plays based on whether the inbounder was guarding the ball. That was something I looked for when I scouted. Is the ball side going to be open, or is the goal side, like the weak side, going to be open? And then I would just lean on those plays depending on the opponent. Don't slap the ball. Most teams traditionally have been taught to slap the ball based on out of bounds. I think that wastes a half a second to a second. As soon as the ref hands the inbounder the ball, that is our cue to go. So, you know, basketball is a game of actor versus reactor. Action's always faster than action. If defense is waiting on the slap of the ball and you go, well, maybe you create a little bit more separation on your screen than or your cut than what you've traditionally have done, and you're saving some time on the 5-second call. I have thought about this. This is not traditional. I haven't done this in a very long time. We experimented with 1 year, but why does everybody get stationary for baseline out of bounds stuff? Like, there is no rule that says you have to be standing still to run your play. Why not just like move around so the defense can't get set? And if you're closer to the ball, you're the screener. If you're further away from the ball, somebody's probably coming to get you. So just typical motion rules, you know, the closer player to the ball screens, the other one's the cutter. I think that would be really fun. But I think if you take anything away from this one that I think any coach could go and implement is multiple plays from the same alignment. And here's how I designed mine, whether it was baseline out of bounds or sideline out of bounds. You probably, if you're listening to this podcast, you have a play that you've run for years, and you've run it for years because it works, and it works like half the time or more. Stick with that play, stick with that alignment, but come up with or borrow, steal like maybe two other plays out of that same alignment, and you've got your bread and butter play, and then you've got some other ones. The only thing I would say is, make sure you can seamlessly flow in the offense after the ball is inbounded. If you get to like your second or third option, how quickly can we flow back into our neutral offense?
Beautiful. Okay. I'm going to talk about offense too.
Oh, come on. I got some defensive questions for you.
I know. Perfect. Okay. Let me run backwards. Let me first talk about motion, because I really like that. So we do one called circle, which is just that, is around the top of the key. Like if the center of our circle being the free throw nail, we just are in constant motion circle, kind of how you've probably done some rebounding games in the past, right? We're circling prior. And as soon as they do get the ball, again, no slap, as soon as they do get the ball, then we just burst into the same movement that we're going to do anyway. So I really do like that. It offers a level of confusion. Okay, now let me run down to some quick hitters. I agree with you. Best inbounder throws it in, but taller is better, in my opinion. Taller is better for a baseline inbound. So if you have, if you're like, I don't know, they're both pretty good passers, pick the taller one. Significantly more angles. Okay, I agree with you about different stuff, same shape. And I will also offer up another opportunity. Same stuff, different shape. right? So I think both of those can create advantages. And that's what we're talking about here in these special situations, is how you can create advantages. You can limit your playbook, make it simpler for your players by doing those two opposite sides of the coin, right? Same stuff, different shape. So I'll give you a very... Do you think it's worth me showing a visual example of that, or do you think everybody gets it?
Let's see one.
Okay. So one of the simplest ones that we use, because we don't want to spend much time teaching based on inbounds, is basically just kind of a corner fill X. So corner fill X. So this would be our high shape. Okay. So, you know, they're filling corner. Sorry about that line. I don't know why it's there. They'd fill the corner. And then 2 and 5 are basically just Xing. 2's coming to the ball. And then off of the butt, 5's coming to the ball. So it's an X, right? So that is one shape that we could get into it by. And let me see if I can reverse these lines. If I can't, I apologize in advance. We would do the exact same thing out of just a box shape, right? Exact same thing. So they get it. We go corner, corner, come to the ball. I know these lines are a little bit messed up. And go to, just out of a box shape. We do the same thing out of what we call a low shape, right? So this would be low shape, 4 across the baseline, right? So 3 actually goes to the corner, 4 goes to the corner, right? 5's coming to the ball side, and 2's coming to the opposite one. So it's the exact same thing out of a whole bunch of different shapes. So without teaching more inbounds plays, you can just change your alignment or shape and run the exact same action or motion. Interrupt me at any point. The opposite is also true. Another thing, the opposite's also true. Mark talked about, like, same thing as the free throw, like slowing down and letting people get set up. I think the opposite can also be an opportunity. Go really fast, right? Like, beg for the ball from the referee, sprint to your spots, and go before they are ready. I think that's another opportunity. But I think where Mark and I are both suggesting is, don't wait for the slap of the ball everywhere, right? Or go. No. Right? You don't have to do that. And then one other really simple opportunity here is, stop trying to score on your base inbounds plays. Can you just catch in dominoes, or catch dominoes is what we call advantage here at Savvy. Can you just catch in with an advantage and then play basketball? I think a lot of times trying to score results in turnovers by the passer, because like, oh, this is the play. I'm supposed to pass to 5 at the rim, and we turn it over. Because we're like, we have to score. And that's the issue with running plays in general on offense, as opposed to actions for advantage. So really try to connect, hey, this is an action here on the baseline inbounds. We want to try to catch with an advantage. If it's for a 9 or a 7, it's obvious, great. But we're just trying to get into action. Let's play basketball. And I think you'll limit your turnovers and create more of those advantages. Okay, let's talk about defense. I actually think that baseline out-of-bound defense may be one of the greatest missed opportunities for defensive advantage in all of basketball. And I believe this so much that we go into, in the lock left, a situation for our blob defense where we actually take advantage of this. So if I told you that the offense had picked up their dribble behind the backboard and they couldn't move, right? And they only had 5 seconds, and you didn't have to even prompt the referee for a 5-second call like you normally do once they pick up the basketball. They're actually going to count from the beginning, right? Would you want that defensive situation? I would argue yes, 100% of the time. You would say, we're probably going to get a steal here. So the outcome that I think you want defensively on blob defense is a steal. That is what you want. Whereas the perspective and mindset that too often we have is, don't let them score. Let's adjust and prepare and react to their baseline inbounds plays. No, we want to steal. And so you have to go to lockleft.com. You can get this, or check out our Lockleft course. We actually talk about what we call full psycho, which is a mode that we turn on when we get a baseline inbounds. And it starts with the perspective of, we are getting a steal here. And you'd be shocked how many steals we actually get from that situation.
Full psycho. That's what my wife calls me. Okay. Yeah. coaches are.
That's what I call my wife. I don't.
That's right. Just like our shirts are.
Don't worry. She doesn't listen to this one.
That's right. Same. All right. coaches are slow to change. I'm going to give you two alternative ideas to what Tyler just said. I'm going to give you a way to defend based on out of bounds, which actually I think you'll force more turnovers doing it this way. And then I'm going to give you a way to enhance or possibly score on your base and out of bounds if you're interested in that kind of thing. All right, starting with defense. There are two different ways that you can guard. Well, there's probably more. I'm just going to go two. You switch or you stay, right? That's the age-old question. Both have their pros and cons. But if you stay, let's say you're not switching, put your inbounds defender underneath the basket. They are your helper. So you have a built-in helper. You're playing 5-on-4. So everybody else, there should be no hedging. There should be no showing from the screener's defender. So I'm going to share my screen here, and I'll show you exactly what I mean. So let's say 5 screens for player 3. I don't want X5 giving any help on 3's cut because we have X1. If I can get this to show up, we have X1 at the rim. They can always take away 3 if they have a small advantage. If not, if there's no advantage, X1 staying at home. X5 is staying attached to 5 the entire time. Let's say 5 comes and screens for 2 now. 2 is locking and trailing. We're really, really physical. We don't go under. We are locked in. There is no space in between X2 and 2 right here. So if they're going to curl, we're curling with them. We're grabbing their jersey and we're running with them. X5 gives no help. That'll instantly make your base on out of bounds defense better. If you switch, same idea. What are you going to give up when you switch? You're going to give up slips. X1 is responsible for taking all slips. Most base out of bounds plays are designed to go to the ball side, and then the weak side is open late. So your on ball defender goes ball side, guard that, take away any open cutter. Weak side, take away any open cutter. And then I would teach mine to go back to the ball after that. So now we go ball side. We take that away. We go weak side. The referee's count should be at 3.5, 4. So then go back to the ball, see if we can get a deflection, see if we get a 5-second call that way. All right. So that's the defensive side. Let me share one thing that I like about base on out of bounds on the offensive side. Okay. Most teams, for those not watching on YouTube, I've got the 1-4 low that everybody has run for the last 20 years. Typically, your best athlete is on the ball side block. They, release and get the catch at the elbow, and then you run something from there. We ran a lot of stuff out of this. We would call, duck. So 5 would duck in. We would, come set a ball screen here. We would back screen with the inbounders, all types of plays that you can run out of this. But to make this better, why would we not look to score originally when the ball is out of bounds, right? If you're into scoring off this, if you're trying to steal some points, then you have 5 seconds to try to score and then get into your 1-4 low stuff. So this is what we did. We would start in a block, in a box, and everybody's going to end up in these same spots that you see here, but we might be able to steal a couple points throughout the game by running this. It's just traditional screen the screener. We've all seen it. If we ever lined up in box, our players knew exactly what we were running. So the only play that I was calling was the play after the play, which was our 1-4 low stuff. So this is what it looks like. 5 would come up, screen for 3. That's your first crack to try to score. If they don't get it, they go out to the corner. 2 releases deep corner, so we're spreading out the defense horizontally. And then 4 is going to screen the screener and then pop back for their catch at the elbow. So now you've got 4 with the ball at the elbow. You got 2 in the long corner, 3 in the ball side corner, 5 on the opposite block, which is exactly what we would have here. So if you run 1-4 flat, that is an addition or a plus one that you could add to it.
I love that. Well, let me interject right here before we go into our last special situation. If you like this stuff, if you geek out on ways to get savvy advantages, then you should check out our Savvy Basketball membership, where we actually outline all of these things for you. Join over 400 other coaches across the world. We have a 7-day free trial on right now, and you can go check it out. The link is in the description below. I think you'll love it. Second, as of the posting of this podcast, we will have announced our new partnership with TOC Coach. And we've long really prioritized teaching standards, culture, the art of coaching within Savvy Basketball. And there are so many coaches that are not basketball coaches that have been drawn to those things. And so we've partnered with TOC Coach and JP Nervin, who's been doing a great job of serving coaches, to actually develop a place for all coaches of all sports to dive deep into becoming a transformational coach, establishing culture, and learning the art of coaching. And so that's TOC Coach. You can check that out. We'll drop that link down below as well. There are many ways to get involved if you're a basketball coach or just a coach in general, or an athletic director who wants to get your whole department certified in the TOC Coach approach. You can check that out. We are excited to expand our impact beyond just basketball coaches, and we're doing that through TOC Coach. All right, Mark, I've got the third one here that I think is an easy one to improve on, but I see most coaches and most players and most teams get wrong over and over again. I think we finish part one with this one, and then we do a special situations part two next week. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right. I will Venmo you $20 right now if you can guess the special situation that I'm thinking of. And do you want to guess? Oh, I was going to give you a hint.
I'll take a hint. I like hints.
Do you want a hint, or do you want to get to ask me one question?
I'll ask you one question.
Okay.
Is the clock running during this special situation?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think that answer made it harder.
Really? I'm going to say using a foul to give.
Wow. You got $20 Venmo, Apple Pay. I know you're exactly. Well, it really was it's a broader one. It's intentional fouling.
Okay.
Which having a foul to give would be a situation where you might want to intentionally foul.
Intentional foul. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So
I don't need the Venmo, by the way. Donate it to your local charity. How about that?
Oh, wait. Speaking of donations, I have a brand new Savvy Coaching hat. It's got our coaching tree here. This one is going to get sent to a winner. I love doing a giveaway. I've been listening to some podcasts that have giveaways recently. So comment below which of the special situations you think you'll benefit from most. And whoever has the best comment, I'll reach out to you and we'll get your address and we'll send you a Savvy Coaching hat. Which special situation? All right, go ahead, Mark. Fouling. Give us tips for fouling.
Number one, try to get a steal. Like, try to foul. Try to get the ball. In worst case scenario, you get what you want, which is foul and the clock stops or you're sending a certain player to the line. So that was first thought that came to mind. Second was actually teach players how to foul. Like with the, you know, I guess if you tell them to just get a steal, that becomes more natural way to get a foul. But here, I'll give you one way to practice this. You should have a call for foul, and it probably shouldn't be foul, because if you're telling your players to get a steal, you don't want to yell foul, and then the referee's going to call a foul every single time, right? You want referee to allow contact, allow physicality, and allow your player to take the ball. So ours was code red. We had different codes that we would be in. It was kind of a way that we communicated certain situations to our players. Red is stop the clock. So red was foul. In practice, randomly yell whatever your word is. So for us, it was code red. We're playing 5-on-5. Our players had not been primed or prompted for this at all. I would just yell code red and see what happens. Most of the time early in the season, the player guarding the ball would stop, stand up, and look at me like I just screamed bomb or fire or something, right? Which means we were not prepared for code red. So as you do that, you're going to normalize your players fouling. And what I hope that spurs is like, hey, coach, why did you say that at this point? And this brings me back to a time where, you know, a lot of times players think all fouls are bad. And I would tell players, hey, you get five. Like, you're going to foul twice if you're playing enough minutes. A third one's just not going to go your way. It's going to be a bad call, which means you got two to play with. You know, like you got two extra, which I actually think in the college game it should be six, but it's another conversation. So educate your players on situations where you might want to foul. We would foul obviously to stop the clock when we were losing, but also if I knew the other coach was out of timeouts, I actually liked fouling around half court to make them have to win the game around half court, no matter how much time was left. I just knew like they didn't have anything in the bank for that situation. And without timeouts, that becomes really difficult. I'm a big proponent of fouling up three with six.
You have to. You just have to. If you're not doing that, you're not yet a savvy coach.
Yeah. I will say time matters. You know, like would yes. I do that with 12 seconds less? No, because there's more possessions in the tank, right? Yeah. So, and
mine's eight or under is kind of where I've
gone. Yeah, I'm like around six. I think eight or under is a good one too, especially in the high school game or lower levels. Mm-hmm. Last thing I'll say on this is, and this kind of goes to deeper. We'll probably get into this in part two, a little foreshadowing, but have plays or offensively or coverages defensively based on how much time is on the clock, right? Like I would have like an under 1 second play, an under 8 second play, you know, all those things. And I think when you foul, where you foul and who you foul all depends on all those time and score situations. So the more you practice, the more organically these will come up.
Yeah. Okay. Let me zoom out, zoom in, and then we'll tap out. Zoom out. Like, oh gosh, these savvy basketball guys have been telling me to play conceptual offense for the last 2 years. And this special situations podcast episode, they're talking a lot about plays. They're talking a lot about baseline inbounds plays. They're talking a lot about like under certain second plays. So this is a good time to frame. Don't start with plays. Start with conceptual basketball. And then your players know how to play. Once they know how to play, guess when you probably want to utilize plays? Special situations, which is why we're talking about it here, right? These are the special situations, but you don't start with special situations. You start with your conceptual offense, your conceptual defense, and then they'll know how to play within these special situations. We just need to create these advantages quicker. We need to neutralize these advantages quicker when we are in these special situations. So I just wanted to frame that for everybody. It's not that we are anti-play, we're anti-play first. It's not that we're anti-technique, we're anti-technique first. We need context first. And that is really what we teach and what we believe here at Savvy. Anything to add to that, Mark?
No, it's good.
All right. Just want to reiterate around fouling, practice how you foul and practice how you don't foul. That's a special situation. Practice how you don't foul first, practice how you do foul second. Foul less and then foul intentionally. Have a take mode. Take mode is what we've called his code red, which is like when we want to foul, but we don't want to necessarily get called foul. We're okay if we get called for a foul, but we will end up with a steal or a foul in take mode. There's no other option. We can't get beat. We're not in take mode. We're not giving up a shot. We either steal the ball or foul before a shot is attempted. That's what take mode is for us, or code red, as Mark has called it. Have one. Make sure your players know it and make sure you practice it. When do you want them to go into take mode without it being a call? I think that you want to teach your players to foul in advantage scenarios. One, breakaway. When the other team's on a fast break and there's a very high percentage chance that they are going to score, they should take a foul. You know, obviously individual players should be smart enough to know if they are individually in foul trouble or if you are in the bonus. But when those two are not the case, we want to take an early foul on a breakaway. I also want my players to get in the habit of fouling on a first dribble big advantage. So if we are in a close off situation and it's a straight line drive to the rim, and again, A and B are not the case, you're not individually in foul trouble and the other team is not the bonus, like I want you to take a hard foul there on the first dribble and knock them off their line. It won't actually even get called that much. That's not going to be like a slap at the arm. That's going to be a foul with your hips situation. Knock them off the line. Give a heavy hand check. Make the refs be like, no hands. But like get in the habit of that first dribble foul. Lastly, in the smile when you're disadvantaged. Like if you're a smaller player in the smile and a bigger offensive player catches the ball on a seal or an offensive rebound, wrap them up. They don't get the ball above their shoulders. Make them earn it from the free throw line. Like these are all special situations that it can help you earn possessions, earn points. Last thought, when down at the end of the game, foul way sooner than you do now. So many times the team's down 6 points at the end of the game and they're scrambling to start fouling at like 15 or 20 seconds. The game's over. Okay. Like it's way sooner. You probably want to start fouling at 3 minutes left at the end of the game. You need to start clock management. Give yourself a chance. You don't have a chance if you start fouling. Like, I mean, even under a minute, I think is a little bit too late if you're down 5 or more points.
Yeah.
You the just more you're down, the more time you need to start fouling.
Yeah. Extend the game as long as possible. Go to take mode early. You might get some steals that shrink that gap a little bit. All right. Let me kind of wrap all yours up into one principle, because we like to be principle based here. So how do we teach our players to foul on a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1? How do we teach our players, if we're smaller, to foul a bigger player or we're at a disadvantage? Okay. It's NFL defense. The N stands for no. The L stands for layups. You can take a guess of what the F stands for. But no blank layups is your principle of how to teach players to foul when at a disadvantage.
Well, I'm pretty sure the F stands for football.
That's right. No football layups. So play NFL defense. I mean, that should be your mentality all the time, right? Is no layups being an open one. Okay, and then I'll share this last thought, and then we'll sign off for part one, is teach your players when not to foul. So have a code green, because the last thing that you want when you are up 3 with 10 seconds to go or 20 seconds to go is an and one. So sometimes it's better to give them the 2 than to give them the and one, or teach them an NFL foul where their hands are not getting above their shoulders, but you got to have one or the other. You can't be in between there.
Yeah. This is a fun one. Special Situations Part 1. If you want more from us, head over to our Savvy Basketball membership. Subscribe to the newsletter. Really appreciate you listening. Remember, you can get the hat if you comment on your favorite special situation and why, and we will send it to you. I'm Tyler. That's Mark. We're Savvy Basketball. Until next time, stay savvy.
Stay savvy.